Julius was standing near the stove. Looking around, he saw someone looking in through the window.
It's Pete!
Julius ran quickly to the back door and jerked it open. Pete was covered with snow and shaking uncontrollably. Julius started knocking the snow off him, and Troy came to help. Then, Julius pulled his own serape off and draped it over Pete.
Come on up closer to the stove. It's not putting out much heat, but it'll help some.
Pete? Where's Fred?
He's dead. The men killed him because he tried to break off a piece of bread for me and him.
Troy took off his serape and gave it to Julius.
Here, Julius. You can wear this for a while. Then when I get too cold, give it back and we'll swap it back and forth.
You can do that or we'll make another one.
How are we gonna make another one? There ain't no carpet left.
Not in this car.
Matt and Troy went into the next car. There were 8 people in this car, a man, 2 women, and 5 children. Matt realized that being separate was a waste of coal and body heat. He decided to invite him into the car that he and the others were inhabiting. When they came into the car, Matt found a place next to Luke and began making more serapes.
That was a good idea, inviting them and their coal into our car.
Well, I would have just invited the coal, but I didn't think they'd go along with that.
Mr. Jensen, do you suppose there's more coal in the other car?
There may be, Troy. And good for you for thinking about it. We'll also cut up that carpet and make some more serapes. We can't do anything about food, but at least we won't freeze to death.
Pueblo. Sheriff McKenzie and Tom Murchison were in the office of the prosecutor, Lloyd Gilmore. Gilmore was on the telephone talking to the governor.
Yes, Governor. Yes, I'm absolutely sure of it. Yes, sir, the sheriff's here with me now. Thank you, Governor. I'll tell him. Yes, sir, we'll take care of it.
Gilmore listened for a moment, then looked over at the sheriff.
The governor wants to know if we've heard anything else about the stranded train.
Nothing from the train itself, but I believe they're putting together a rescue train to go up and relieve them.
Gilmore repeated the information to the governor, then hung up the phone.
There won't be any need for another trial for Luke Chardine, Tom. I'm dropping all charges.
Oh, thank you, Lloyd. Now, I've known Luke Chardine ever since he came here, and I know he's a good man. You're doing the right thing.
What are we going to do about Briggs?
It's already done. Governor Stout just removed him from office. He wants you to inform him.
That's something I will do with great pleasure.
May I come as well, Sheriff? I very much want to see this.
Sure. Come along if you want to.
A few minutes later, Sheriff McKenzie, followed by both Murchison and Gilmore, barged into the judge's office without so much as a knock.
Here, what's the meaning of this?
Judge Briggs was holding his pants up with one hand, while a young woman, one that Sheriff McKenzie knew worked at the Colorado Social Club, was busy trying to rearrange her clothes.
You'd better leave, miss.
What? Who are you telling to leave? If anyone is going to leave, it will be you and this entourage you have with you. Get out! Get out of here at once, or by damn, I will hold you in contempt of court!
I already hold you in contempt, you sorry bastard. Eamon Briggs, you've been removed from the bench by order of the governor of the state of Colorado. And you're also under arrest for stagecoach robbery.
Stagecoach robbery? Are you out of your mind?
Tell him, Mr. Gilmore.
Mr. Briggs.
You will address me as Your Honor or Judge Briggs.
You're lucky I'm even addressing you as Mr. You have been removed from the bench, Mr. Briggs, and I'm filing charges with the Attorney General of the state, charging you with collusion with Dewey Farrell and Jebediah Clayton for the attempted robbery of the Wetmore to Yorkville stagecoach.
What do you mean, attempted robbery?
It means they tried to rob it, but they were both killed.
What does that have to do with me?
We found a note in Farrell's pocket. A note from you, Briggs, telling him that the coach would be carrying $3,000 and demanding 1/3 of the money. Now stick out your hands, Briggs. I'm gonna cuff you.
No, please. Don't parade me in front of the people in handcuffs. I'll lose all their respect.
Tell me, Mr. Briggs, what makes you think anyone respects you now?
With the bright sun coming in through the windows of the car and reflecting off the snow as well, the temperature in the car had risen so that even with the smallest of flames, The stove was able to keep the car comfortably warm.
Folks, I suggest we put the fire out for now.
Now, just why would we want to do a thing like that? We're all starving to death, but at least we're warm.
Think about it, Senator. With the bright sun out, we're getting some heat in the car without the stove. But tonight, when the temperature drops several degrees below zero, we'll need the heat the stove can provide. We have to save fuel to be certain that we'll have it at night when we need it.
We've got extra coal now, and my daughter is ill. I'll not have you make it worse by putting out the fire in that stove.
We've got some extra coal, yes, but I don't know how many more days we'll be here. It's best to be as conservative as we can.
Oh, Jared, you know he's right. You know how cold these last two nights have been. It will be worth being without heat in the daytime if we can keep warm at night.
We aren't going to be here much longer. Maybe not even tonight. I'm absolutely convinced that a rescue train will reach us today.
I certainly hope you're right, Senator, but I don't think we should take a chance.
I don't either.
Mr. Purvis, what about you?
I'm sorry, Senator, but I'm going to have to go along with Mr. Jensen on this one.
I'm not going to let my daughter get cold and get worse.
I'm not so cold, Daddy.
All right, all right. It's obvious that I'm the only sane one here, but I can't stand up to all of you. Put out the fire.
The fire was extinguished, and within 15 minutes, the temperature began to drop.
I told you it was going to get cold in here.
It'll be much colder tonight.
It was during this discussion that someone came in through the front door.
It's one of them. It's one of the men who took over the dining car.
Troy's right. This one's name is Morris.
Morris reached out and grabbed Timmy, one of the children who had come in from the other car.
Mama!
Timmy!
Morris tightened his grip and held his pistol to the boy's head.
You ain't going nowhere, boy.
What do you want, Morris?
We want the whore. Give us the whore and we'll give you something to eat.
If she didn't go before, what makes you think she's going to come today?
Because it's been two whole days since any of you had anything to eat. And if the whore will just come along with me, why, we'll feed the whole train.
Well, how are you going to do that? There ain't no cooks left.
Oh, we'll get one of you boys to do the cooking.
She's not going.
Wait a minute. The other day, I was on the woman's side. I figured she shouldn't have to go if she didn't want to. But now I'm thinking, why not? I mean, we all know this is what she does anyway, so why not go ahead and do it again? Especially if it will get her and all the rest of us something to eat. There's no telling how long we're going to be sitting here. You know that if the rescue train could have got through, it would have come for us yesterday.
She's not going, Purvis.
Let me make a bit easier for you to decide. If the whore comes with me, you all eat, and the boy lives. If she don't come with me, none of you eat. I'll kill her and the boy and go back by myself.
Morris, what makes you think you're going back, with or without her?
What do you mean?
I mean the young lady isn't going anywhere, and neither are you.
Are you blind? You do see I'm holding a gun to this boy's head, don't you? Now, I'm going to count to three. If the whore don't say she's going back with me by the time I get to three, I'm going to kill this...
Steven, did you see that?
Are you crazy? You could have killed the boy.
I don't think so.
Dag! Wait until I tell all my friends.
What difference does it make? We're all going to starve to death anyway.
Purvis, we may get hungry, but we aren't going to starve. I once went 10 days without eating, and I've heard of people going for as long as a month without eating. This is what we need to survive. In order of importance, we need heat, so that we won't freeze to death. We need water, and with all the snow, we'll have plenty of that. The least important for our immediate survival is food.
That might not be the most important, but my feeling is we're going to get awful hungry before too long.
I'm hungry now.
Like I said, I've been through this before. We'll get through it. And as long as Santelli and the others stay in the dining car, they're more trapped than we are. We're the ones who are going to be rescued, not them. When the rescue team comes, Santelli and the men with them will go to jail and they'll hang.
It's been 2 days. Do you think the train will get in before Christmas?
Sally took 2 dried apple pies from the oven.
Because if it doesn't, I'm going to have a lot of extra food to get rid of.
Oh, I'm sure the train will get here before Christmas. But even if it doesn't, you don't have to worry about getting rid of the extra food. Duff and I can take care of that for you. And we may as well start by having a piece of pie.
Absolutely not. The pies haven't even cooled yet.
I'll bet that's Eddie telling me the train got here and Matt is waiting at the station.
Smoke hurried to the door and opened it. Eddie, the 15-year-old telegraph assistant, was standing on the front porch.
So, Matt's here, is he? What time did the train get in?
No, sir. He ain't here, and the train ain't got in, and it ain't going to get in.
Well, what do you mean it isn't going to get in?
They done sent a rescue train for it. They'll be taking everyone back down the mountain to Buena Vista.
Oh, well, that means Matt definitely won't be here for Christmas.
No, it doesn't seem likely that he will. But at least if the train takes him back to Buena Vista, he won't have to spend Christmas Day trapped in the snow on the top of the mountain.
Matt was looking out the window of the train car. There, just alongside the car, was a coyote. There was no food for the coyote, and Matt could only believe that he was there to get out of the snow, the car itself having provided enough of a break to keep relatively clear a narrow area right alongside the track. Matt pulled his pistol and started to raise the window, thinking to shoot the coyote. Then he thought that a gunshot outside the car might bring more snow down. Matt looked back into the car. He had a plan, but he was going to need help. And now he had to figure out which of his fellow passengers would most likely be able to help him. Looking over everyone, he decided that for what he needed, Julius would be best.
Julius, come here.
Julius came over to Matt's seat.
Yes, sir?
Look out the window, right down there.
Uh-huh. It's a coyote.
Shh. No, it's not. It's a small deer.
Mr. Jensen, you done gone crazy if I'm not eating? That ain't no deer. That's a coyote.
Once when I was very hungry, I barbecued a coyote and it tasted like deer meat. As far as these folks are concerned, it's a small deer, and by the time they see it, they won't be able to tell a difference.
Uh-huh. You gonna shoot it?
I'm afraid if I shoot, it might bring down a lot more snow. I got another idea. I'm gonna need your help.
Now, I do whatever I can to help.
I'm going out on the back vestibule. You go out on the front. Then I want you to chase the coyote toward me.
Oh, no. What if the coyote runs under the car?
Let's just pray that he doesn't.
Oh, well, I'm a praying man.
Good. Better get started.
Matt went out onto the back vestibule, then leaned around just far enough to see the coyote. It was still there, sniffing around. Matt pulled out his pocket knife and flipped it open. Julius climbed down from the vestibule at the far end of the car.
Hey!
He started after the coyote, and the coyote started in Matt's direction. Matt moved to the edge of the vestibule then, timing his jump. He leapt out into a belly flop into the snow. That he was successful was evidenced by the fact that he could feel the coyote under him. Carefully, Matt lifted his body just far enough to reach his hand under. He grabbed the coyote by the back of the neck, then cut his throat.
Praise the Lord, Mr. Jensen! You got him!
You go back in now. I'll be along shortly.
Matt rolled under the car to keep anyone inside from seeing what he was doing. Then he cut off the head and legs. After that, he skinned it, so that when he rolled back out from under the car, he was holding an unidentifiable carcass. He carried the carcass into the car and held it up.
Look, look! Mr. Jensen killed him a small deer!
I hate to deflate everyone's joy, but there are 32 of us. How is a deer that small going to feed all of us?
We're going to make soup, and we aren't going to waste any of it.
It's going to be an awfully thin soup.
Trust me, Senator. It'll be the best thing you've ever eaten.
It can't be all that good. We don't have any vegetables. We don't even have any salt.
Oh, yes, we have salt, Mr. Bailey. I learned from an old mountain man friend of mine to never be without salt.
Matt pulled a little cloth bag from his pocket.
And I've got some pepper that I brought from the diner.
All we need to do now is gather up some snow, melt some water, and start cooking.
What are we going to cook it in?
I have the perfect stew pot for it, Mr. Purvis. There's a brand new chamber pot in the toilet that hasn't even been put out yet, so it hasn't been used. It'll be just right to cook this in.
All right, so we can cook. But how are we going to eat it? We don't have bowls or spoons.
I have a knife, a spoon, and a collapsible cup. We'll pass the cup around and eat one at a time. The children will go first.
Using his penknife, Matt began to cut up the carcass. Troy also had a knife, so he came to the back of the car where Matt was working. Troy started to make a cut, Then he stopped and looked up at Matt with a questioning expression on his face.
Mr. Jensen, I have to tell you, this don't look like no deer I ever seen before.
You don't say.
It look more like a dog.
Some cultures, dog is a delicacy.
But this ain't no dog, is it?
Nope.
What is it? A wolf? A fox? A coyote?
You heard a mule deer, haven't you, Troy?
Well, yes, sir, but I know this ain't no mule deer.
Coyote deer.
We ain't gonna be telling the others this, are we?
Nope.
Well, I expect this will be the best coyote deer I done ever ate.
If you ask me, Morris has done got himself killed. Just as sure as a gun is iron. Otherwise he'd be back here by now.
More likely, Kelly.
What if they come into this car after us?
They tried it once before, remember? I don't think they're likely to try it again, because the only way they can get into the car is through that door. And they can only come through the door one at a time.
You know what? We're going to run out of coal pretty soon. We won't have enough to cook our food or heat the car.
No problem. Just go into the next car and take whatever coal they have.
Yeah, good idea.
Compton stepped out onto the vestibule. A few minutes later, he returned, empty-handed.
Where's the coal?
There ain't no coal in either of the next two cars. There ain't no people there either.
What you mean there ain't no people? What happened to them?
They've all moved into the last car, and I figure they must have took their coal with them.
Damn.
And I'll tell you something else. They're cooking something.
What you mean they're cooking some? What do they got to cook?
I don't know, but you can smell it as soon as you get to the door. And the way they're laughing, you'd think they're having a party.
Well, why don't we just go and stop their party?
You really want to do that? I'm sure you've noticed that Morris ain't come back. Besides, Matt Jensen's with him.
Are we not going to do anything?
Why? Whatever food they have, it can't be much. And they have a lot of people to feed. We've got all the food we can eat for 2 weeks if necessary. As long as nobody does something foolish, things are fine just as they are.
December 23rd. Friday morning dawned as a bright and sunny day, and that did help with the heating inside the car. But the coyote Matt had caught and cooked yesterday had been completely consumed, and there was little chance that another opportunity would just present itself as this one had. Abner Purvis came back to talk to Matt.
Me, Jones, Turner, and Simpson have come up with a plan.
What's your plan?
We're going to walk out of here.
Which way are you going? The snow in front's 300 feet high.
That's why we're going to go back to Buena Vista. If we can get through, we'll get a rescue train back up here.
Mr. Purvis, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind but that there's already been a rescue attempt. If they could have gotten through, they'd be here by now. It tells me that the way behind us is as blocked as the way before us.
That may be, but we've been talking about it, and we don't plan to stay here and starve to death. Besides which, we had a little something to eat yesterday, so we ain't going to be any stronger than we are right now.
You might have a point there. But you aren't going to get anywhere without snowshoes.
We can try.
When do you plan to leave?
The sooner the better. If we leave now, we might be over the worst part of it while there's still light.
It took Purvis and the other three men about 5 minutes to get ready. Then, everyone in the car came to the back door to wish him luck and see him off. With hopeful hearts, they watched through the back window as the men attempted to go over the wall of snow that was piled up behind the train. Their attempts to climb the snow met with utter failure. They would either get a few feet up the side only to slide back down again, or the very act of climbing itself would pull down large slides of snow. They tried for half an hour without the slightest bit of success. Finally, they had no recourse but to give up and return to the train.
I'm sorry. We tried, but we couldn't get over the snow.
Matt had heated some water in the same chamber pot they had used to make the soup the day before. And though it was nothing but warm water, it made him feel better to drink it.
What do we do now?
Just have to wait and see what develops.
Matt looked over toward Millie and Becky.
How's she doing this morning?
Not well. Not well at all. She's not even conscious anymore. I'm afraid she might be dying.
Matt took some warm water over to him, making certain that the water wasn't too hot.
Bathe her face in this. won't help with the illness, but if she can feel it, might make her feel a little bit better.
Bless you.
Millie tore off some of the hem of her skirt, and using it as a washcloth, she bathed her daughter's face gently with the warm water. Becky made no response.
Mrs. Daniels, you've been sitting in that same position for ever so long. Why don't you let me sit there and hold your little girl's head in my lap while you get a little rest?
Oh, well, thank you, dear. Yes, that would be wonderful. If you're sure you don't mind.
No, ma'am, I don't mind at all.
Jenny changed places with Millie, and Jenny put Becky's head in her lap.
I'm gonna hold you for a while now, Becky, while your mama gets a little rest. I hope you don't mind.
Jenny looked down and smiled at Becky, but she got no reaction from the girl. Jenny put her hand on Becky's forehead and found that she was running a very high fever.
Dear Lord, I know that I haven't always led the life that I should, and I know that I have no right to ask you for anything. But maybe since I'm not asking for anything for myself, you will hear this prayer. Please, Lord, don't let this innocent child die like this. It's nearly Christmas. Please send her the Christmas gift of life. Amen.
Big Rock. Again, Smoke and Duff took the sleigh into town. This time, though, Sally came with them. Smoke let Sally off in front of the Big Rock Mercantile. Duff got out in front of Longmont's. Then Smoke drove on to the livery barn. Stopping just outside, he unhitched the team, then led him into the barn. The livery man, Ike Shelby, was just inside the barn talking to three other men, Sheriff Carson, Dan Norton, the prosecuting attorney, and Alan Blanton, editor and publisher of the Big Rock Chronicle.
Hello, Monty. Hello, Ike. I'd like to leave my team here for a while so that they're somewhat out of the cold.
Sure thing, Smoke. Billy, take Mr. Jensen's team.
What's going on?
We had a murder here last night.
A murder? What happened?
No, when Billy came to open up this morning, he found Corey Calhoun's body lying over there.
Ike pointed to a spot in front of a stall.
Shot?
He'd been stabbed.
You knew him, didn't you, Smoke?
Yeah, I knew him.
How well did you know him?
He worked for me from time to time. He was a good man, and he, Pearlie, and Cal were friends. Stabbed, you say?
Through the heart.
Do you have any ideas on what happened?
According to some of the boys over at the Brown Dirt, Calhoun had a pretty good night of poker and won well over $100.
Let me guess. You didn't find any money on him?
Not a cent. My guess is that someone saw him leave the table a winner, followed him over here, and killed him.
What about footprints in the snow?
No help. There are hundreds of footprints everywhere. None that will do us any good.
I hope you find him.
We will.
Leaving his team with Ike and his sleigh parked outside, Smoke walked down to the depot to see what he could find out.
Well, the rescue train tried to get through to him, but it failed because the tracks are blocked by snow.
How do you know they failed?
These stories were wired to the Big Rock Chronicle.
Phil showed Matt the newspaper.
Special to the Chronicle by wire from the Buena Vista Nugget. Relief effort unsuccessful. Train forced to turn back. The train which was to relieve the trapped Redcliffe special was forced to return to Buena Vista when a wall of snow presented an insurmountable impediment. The engineer stated that not even with the plow that was affixed to the front of his engine could the snow be removed. Hodge Deckert has assured those who have loved ones on board the train that the passengers are in no danger or great distress, as the diner carries extra food for just such a contingency. It is expected that the snow will be sufficiently melted within a few days to allow another rescue attempt to be made. Eamon Briggs removed from bench. May face prison term. Word has reached the Nugget that Eamon Briggs, formerly a district judge located in Pueblo, has been removed from the bench by order of Governor John Long Rout. According to Sheriff McKenzie, Briggs, who is now a guest of the Pueblo County Jail, was involved in a nefarious scheme with Sheriff Farrell of Fremont County. Briggs would inform Farrell when money was being transferred, and Farrell and his partner in crime, usually one of his deputies, would rob the victim so identified. The latest attempt at robbery failed when Farrell and his deputy were both killed by the heroic action of Mr. Nugent, who was riding shotgun guard. Though Sheriff McKenzie has not yet disclosed the incriminating evidence discovered as a result of the failed robbery attempt, it is sufficient to result in the incarceration of Briggs until such time as a judge can be made available to try the case.
Ah, that doesn't surprise me about Briggs. I never have trusted him. Listen, Phil, I'm probably going to be in town for the rest of the day. If you get any further word about the train, you'll let me know, won't you?
Yes, of course I will. Where will I find you?
I don't know. At Longmont's, I suppose. Sally came into town with us, and she'll be wanting to have lunch, probably at Kathy's kitchen. But if you don't find me, I'll be checking in with you from time to time.
When Smoke stepped into Longmont's a few minutes later, he saw Duff drinking coffee and reading the newspaper.
The rescue train was turned back.
Yeah, Phil told me.
Oh, there's an interesting story here. The deputy sheriff from Pueblo County is on that train, escorting two prisoners. One of the prisoners has had all the charges against him dropped, but he doesn't know that, and there'll be no way for him to know it until they are freed.
Who are the prisoners?
Michael Santelli and Luke Chardine.
I hope Santelli isn't the one who's been pardoned.
Nay, 'tis Luke Chardine. Do you know Mr. Santelli?
I never had the displeasure of a personal encounter with him, but I certainly know who he is, and he's a bad one. I don't like to think of him being on the same train trapped in a snowslide with a bunch of innocent people.
Aye, the longer one has to hold him in custody, the greater the mischief he can create.
Louis Longmont brought Smoke a cup of coffee without being summoned.
Did you hear about the murder we had here in town last night?
Murder, is it? I've never heard a thing about it.
It happened over at the livery stable. I was talking to Monty and a few others about it. Corey Calhoun got killed.
Oh, 'tis sorry I am to hear of it. Did you know him?
Yeah, he worked for me from time to time. He was a good man and a friend of Pearlie and Cal. They'll be upset to hear about it.
I haven't talked to Monty since I heard about it. Does he have any ideas as to who might have done it?
Only indirect ideas. It seems that Corey won quite a bit of money in a card game over at the Brown Dirt. Sheriff Carson thinks someone may have seen him win, then followed him from the saloon. He was killed in the livery stable.
That means nobody saw it.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's exactly what that means. If nobody saw it happen, I think the chances of finding out who actually did it are rather slim.
I'll keep an eye open. Oftentimes, when someone comes into an unexpected sum of money, they'll come in here and be big spenders all of a sudden.
A couple of Smoke's friends came in then, and they invited Smoke and Duff to join them in a friendly game of poker. They were still playing 3 hours later when Sally came into the saloon.
Sally, welcome to my humble establishment.
Thank you, Louis. Smoke, Duff, are you two getting a little hungry?
Hungry? Why would we... Oh, it's 1:30. We were supposed to meet you at Kathy's at noon, weren't we?
That was my understanding.
Sally, you should leave this man who so mistreats you. If you'd chosen me over him, never would you be disappointed by such forgetfulness.
Louis, I would be impressed, but I know that you say that to every married woman in town.
Only to the pretty ones.
And only to the married ones.
Louis, she has you pegged. You only carry on so with women that you know are safe. You wouldn't dare say such a thing to a single woman for fear she would take you up on your offer.
Ah, how well my friends know me. Enjoy your lunch at Kathy's, and tell her that I long for her.
On board the Red Cliff Special, Saturday, December 24th. Bailey was looking through the window of the car, and he waved Matt over.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've tried to reach us, but gave up when they couldn't get through. They probably aren't that worried because they figure that we have enough food to last. But if they knew what our situation really was, I think they would make more of an effort.
Bailey pointed toward the telegraph wire.
If I could reach that wire, I could send a message back to Buena Vista, telling them of our serious condition.
You could send a message? You mean you know telegraphy?
Yes. Before I was a conductor, I was a telegrapher for the Western Union.
But how would you send a message? We aren't connected.
I'm pretty sure that the wire going forward is down, but it looks like the wire going back to Buena Vista is still up. I can see it over the top of the snowbank behind us, and if it didn't go down here, I'm sure it's up for the rest of the way. All I have to do is connect to it.
Connect what to it?
I have a telegraph key, but I don't know how to get up there.
Luke overheard the conversation and came over to join them.
Did I hear you right? You can send a telegram?
Oh, if I could connect to that wire, I could, but in order to do that, I have to climb that pole, and it's covered with snow and ice. Climbing it would be impossible.
Luke looked at the pole for a moment, then he shook his head.
It will be difficult, but it isn't impossible.
Wait a minute, you saying you think you can climb it?
Why not? I've climbed icy masts before, and that's with the ship rolling in the sea. Yeah, I think I can get up there.
Oh, Luke, no, that's much too dangerous.
Don't worry, Jenny. I've done this kind of thing before.
Matt and Bailey went outside with Luke to see how he would attack the pole. Jenny was outside as well, because she was worried about Luke. They studied the pole for a moment or two, rising from the midst of a huge drift of snow.
How are you even going to approach the pole?
I don't know. That does seem to be a problem.
Luke looked at the pole, then he looked back at the train, then he smiled.
I'll climb up onto the top of the car. Then leap over to the pole.
Luke, no, you can't be serious.
I don't have to leap onto the pole. Just into the snowbank close enough to it to be able to grab hold.
You know, I think it might work. I wouldn't want to be the one to do it, but I think it might work.
Luke climbed to the top of the car. Then he stepped out to the edge to examine the pole for a moment. After that, he moved to the opposite side of the pole to get a running start. He leapt across the opening, then disappeared into the snowbank at the foot of the pole.
Luke!
Luke appeared out of the snowbank, his arms and legs wrapped around the pole.
Got it!
Oh, thank God!
They watched as Luke climbed to the top, then threw a leg over the crossbeam and pulled himself into a secure sitting position. He looked back down and threw his arms open wide as he flashed a big smile.
Oh, Luke, hold on!
I'm all right. Or this pole isn't even moving. Mr. Bailey, what do I do now?
Cut the wire and toss it over here so that I can get to it.
Will I get shocked?
No. Telegraph works by direct current. There's no danger.
If I cut the wire, won't it mean you can't send a signal?
No, think about it for a minute. It'll be fine, as long as there isn't another break in the wire between here and Buena Vista.
Luke cut the wire as Bailey instructed, then tossed it to him. Matt was able to catch it, and he handed the end of it to Bailey, who attached it to his instrument. Luke came back down the pole about halfway, then leaped out into the snowbank again. He disappeared, but he reappeared a moment later, once more all covered in snow.
I'm gonna have to quit doing that.
Bailey got the wire attached, then sent a BV signal.
Is it working?
I don't know. I haven't gotten a reply.
Again, he sent a BV signal.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chardine. Looks like I sent you up the post for nothing. We may as well get back in out of the cold. It was just a...
Suddenly, the telegraph key began clacking.
We're through! We're through!
Bailey listened to the clicks for a moment.
Bernie is apologizing because he was away from the key, and he wants to know who's calling him.
Bailey began sending a message, his fingers moving rapidly as the clicks went out over the line. Sugarloaf Ranch, December 24th. Once breakfast was on the table, Sally joined Smokin' Duff.
I just hate to think of Matt being on that train. I was so looking forward to having him join us for Christmas.
Matt's younger and resilient. I imagine he can get through just about anything. But I would have enjoyed having him here for Christmas. Christmas should be with family. And we're the closest thing to family that Matt has.
We aren't just the closest thing to it. We are family.
Sally started to get up, but Smoke held out his hand.
Oh, I'll get it.
Smoke hurried to the front door and opened it to see young Eddie standing on the porch.
Eddie, come on in. Get out the cold. Don't tell me. The train is in.
No, sir, it ain't in. And it's worse than we thought.
Worse how?
We got a telegram from the train. It's been sent out all over. Mr. Wilson, he thought you might want to read it.
I see. Our situation is dire. Santelli has killed Proxmire, and with his colleagues, taken dinner car. All food is being withheld from passengers. Please come soonest. Bailey, conductor.
Smoke's expression was grim. He looked back at Eddie.
Why don't you have some breakfast, Eddie?
Thank you, sir.
Smoke led Eddie back into the dining room.
Eddie, it's so nice to have your company. I'll get another plate. Smoke, you can get...
Sally stopped when she saw the expression on Smoke's face.
Smoke, what is it? What's wrong?
Smoke showed the telegram to Sally, who read it quickly.
Oh, no.
Duff reached for the message, and she gave it to him.
What can we do?
I'm going up there. I'm going to load a sled with as much food as I can get on it, and I'm going up there.
Smoke, if a train can't get through, how are you going to get there?
I'll get there because I must get there.
And I'll be going with you.
No need for you to go. This isn't going to be easy.
Smoke, what kind of friend would I be if I didn't go with you? What kind of a friend would you be if you didn't allow me to go?
All right, let's get ready. We need to get as much under our belt as we can while we still got light. I've no doubt that it'll be well dark before we get there.
Aye, I'll find some warm clothes.
Eddie.
Yes, sir?
I hate to interrupt your breakfast. So, just grab yourself a couple of bear claws. I want you to get back into town as quickly as you can and go by Ebersole's bakery and get as much bread as he has available. Then go to Dunnigan's store. Tell him to pack up as much jerky as he can get together. Tell him we're going to have to feed a lot of people. We'll be in to pick it up before we leave.
Yes, sir!
Bob Ward had come to Big Rock, and he had been waiting for the return of Santelli and his men since the day the train was due to arrive. Seeing that the train had been delayed, but not knowing who or what might have been the cause of such a delay, he had decided to remain in Big Rock until he could find out the facts one way or another. But staying in town had begun to cost him a lot of money. Fortunately for him, he had happened upon a foolish young cowboy who had been a bit too lucky at the poker tables. Now, with his pockets full, Bob Ward was living it up in the small town of Big Rock. He was having lunch at Little Man Lambert's Cafe and reading a special edition of the Big Rock Chronicle. Because it was a special edition, it had only two stories, and as it happened, both stories were of intense interest to Ward.
No clues on murder. Sheriff Monty Carson told the Chronicle that he had no leads on the murder of Corey Calhoun. Calhoun was a well-known and well-liked young man who worked as a cowboy during the season and was spoken highly of by all who knew him, employers and fellow workers alike. Calhoun's body was found Friday morning by an employee of the livery stable. Train passengers in peril. The conductor of the Red Cliff Special has sent a telegram in which he says that the convicted murderer, Michael Santelli, has killed Deputy Sheriff Proxmire and now occupies the dining car, denying food to the starving passengers. That someone could be so evil in this Christmas season defies all understanding. We can but pray for the safe delivery of those unfortunate passengers and the ultimate capture and execution of the criminal Santelli and his evil associates.
Did you hear? Smoke Jensen is going up the pass to where the train's blocked.
Ward overheard the conversation and turned to listen to the pair of men sitting a few tables over from him.
How do you know?
Oh, I was just down to Ebersole's bakery. Mr. Ebersole's putting up enough bread to feed more than 30 people for a week. Smoke is going to pick him up, then take it up to the train.
How's he going to get up there? Pass is completely blocked.
Well, I don't have any idea how he's going to do it. But if it can be done at all, you better believe that Smoke is the one who can do it.
When is he getting started?
Real soon, I reckon. Soon as he can load all the stuff he'll be taking with him on a sled that he plans to pull along with him.
Ward left the restaurant and hurried to the livery where he was keeping the six horses intact. Ike Shelby spoke with him before he left.
How long you plan on leaving them horses here? Reason I ask, they're taking up a lot of room. And folks that's coming into town are wanting to board the horses to keep them out of the cold while they're here.
I don't know how much longer until I need them.
Yeah. Here's the thing. You see them two horses there? Now, they belong to Smoke Jensen and Duff McAllister. And they're wanting to leave them here while they go up to rescue them folks on the train. Now, I reckon you heard about that, didn't you?
I heard about it. You mean they ain't gonna go up on horseback?
There ain't no horse that can get up there now, and more than likely no mountain goats either. The only way a body could get up there now is to climb the mountain, and that ain't gonna be easy, not with all this snow. But I reckon if anyone can do it, Smoke can.
Yeah, that's what I heard someone say. They talk about Smoke Jensen like he's some kind of a hero or something.
Well, sir, you might say that he is. And that brings me back to them six horses you got boarded here. Would you mind if I sort of put some of them together? Like, say, three stalls with two horses in each stall. It'd help me out, and you'd be saving money.
That'll be fine. I need some of my tack.
Sure, what do you want?
I want a poncho, blanket, and my rifle.
Look here, mister. Sounds like you're going hunting. Now that's true. You be awful careful about where you shoot that rifle. You could cause an avalanche, and you for sure don't want to get caught in one of those.
I'll be careful.
All right, come on back, get your tack.
As they passed one of the stalls, Ike pointed.
Reckon you heard about the murder. Billy found him lying right there. He'd been stabbed.
Yeah, I read about it in the paper.
There's your tack. All there, as you can see. Your stuff is safe here. Yes, sir. All the years I've been running this livery, ain't never been nothing stole from it.
Just somebody murdered.
What? Oh. Yeah, sir, I guess that's right. I sure ain't proud of it, but I guess that's right.
By now, they had run the wire from the telegraph line in through the window of the car so the Bailey could send and receive messages from the relative comfort of the car. Some of the passengers had asked that he send messages back to let their families know they were still alive. Senator Daniels asked if he could send a message back to the Denver newspapers.
All right.
Take this down. My fellow citizens, I am addressing you by the magic of harnessed lightning to tell you that I am safe, though I and the others with me are being held hostage by a convicted criminal, Michael Santelli. He and the other brigands with him have taken control of the dining car, wherein is stored all the food on this train. The result is 4 days of starvation and want. I want all my constituents to know that I and the others herein exposed to such danger and privation are doing all we can to fight against this evil, and it is my belief that we will prevail. But I ask, no, I demand of the Denver and Pacific that they do whatever is necessary to come to our rescue. It is unthinkable that in this day of mighty steam engines and powerful steam shovels, of telegraph and telephone, that a loud and resounding hue and cry has not gone out over all the land to cause a mighty mobilization of forces sufficient to overcome any such barriers as may stand between us and our eventual rescue. I further demand that...
Senator Daniel stopped and looked down at Bailey.
You aren't writing this down anymore.
Senator, I can't send all that. I can't send more than 25 words in each message.
Why not?
Because this is not a regular Western Union station. We have what's called emergency access, which allows us but limited use of the line. If I attempted to send everything you just said, we would be cut off. And I feel that it's vital we keep this line open.
No! Very well. Very well.
If you have something you can send in 25 words or less, I'd be happy to send it.
All right. Send this to the Colorado Rocky News. Though we face starvation and privation, I have rallied the beleaguered passengers to show courage in the wake of hardship. We will prevail. Jared Daniels, State Senator.
Nope. That's 27 words, Senator.
Good Lord! All right. Change "we will prevail" to "I will prevail" and sign it Senator Daniels.
Bailey sent the message, along with several other messages. Then, after a few minutes of quiet, the telegraph keys began clacking.
Mr. Jensen, there's a message coming in for you.
For me?
Yes, sir.
What's it say?
I'm sure this has some meaning for you.
What?
I pulled your behind from the snow once before, and I'm going to do it again. Just hang on. I'll rescue you as soon as I can.
Yes, sir. It has a lot of meaning for me. It means Smoke is coming to get us. It means we'll be out of here sometime within the next 24 hours.
Smoke? Are you talking about Smoke Jensen?
Yep.
I'm well aware of the exploits of Smoke Jensen. However, he is but one man, and I don't see how one man can possibly come to our rescue. I mean, even if he gets here, what can he do? He can't free the train, and he is no more capable of taking the dining car back than we are.
Never underestimate Smoke Jensen. If he says he's going to rescue us, that is exactly what he's going
to
do.
It must be refreshing to have such childish confidence in a person.
Oh, there's nothing childish about it, Senator, as I'm sure you will see soon enough.
Once more, Bailey recorded the incoming message on a tablet.
Well, I'll be.
What is it?
Bailey showed Matt the message. Matt read it, and a big smile came across his face.
Luke, you might want to hear this message.
Luke had been sitting in the seat just across from Jenny, who was still holding Becky's head in her lap.
Yeah? This message pertains to you.
Luke came over to Matt and Bailey, his face reflecting curiosity and a slight bit of anxiousness.
Sheriff Farrell killed while robbing stagecoach. Judge Briggs indicted for collusion, removed from the bench. Luke's defense claim reevaluated. All charges have been dropped. Governor Rout has vacated his sentence.
Does that mean I'm free? Really free?
It does indeed. When we're rescued from this train, you can go back to your ranch at Buena Vista. Free man.
Smoke and Duff had been climbing for the better part of 4 hours now. On three separate occasions, they had come to an absolute halt, having encountered one insurmountable obstacle after another. Each time they did so, they'd have to backtrack, sometimes for 2 or 3 miles, until they could find another route. They were on their fourth try, and with each subsequent try, the trail became even more difficult. They were walking on snowshoes, and that was making their passage even more exhausting. They stopped and sat down under a juniper tree.
It's hard enough just to get your breath at this altitude anyway. And it's even more difficult when you're exerting yourself as hard as we are.
This trail seems somewhat more difficult than any of the others we've tried so far.
It is. The other trails were much easier going. But as you saw, each of those trails reached a point where we could go no further. I would rather have the trail difficult, but with no insurmountable obstacles, than to have an easy trail, which comes to a dead end.
Hey, you have a point there.
Bob Ward was exhausted. He'd not thought about bringing snowshoes, and he had to struggle mightily with each step he took. Twice he lost the two men he was following, only to see him coming back down the trail toward him. Ward continued on through the snow now, step by agonizing step, when he saw ahead of him that the two men that he had been following were resting. That was when the solution came to him. He would kill both of them, take their snowshoes, put one pair on, then go on to the train carrying the extra pair of snowshoes. Once he had reached the train, he would give the other pair to his brother, abandon the men he had recruited to help him, and he and his brother would split the $5,000 between them. He gauged the distance between him and the two men who were sitting down resting to be no more than about 50 yards, an easy shot with the rifle. He would shoot the one farthest away first, because it would be easier if the second shot was at the man nearest him. Ward raised the Winchester .30-06 to his shoulder and aimed at Smoke.